Good afternoon. I call the meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. For the record, it is 3:30 p.m. on February 28th, 2017. We are in the Belts Committee Room of the Tom Stewart Building. We have a quorum to do business. Present are Senators Gardner, Senator McKinnon, myself, Senator Bishop, Senator Hoffman. I've been informed by the staff of Senator Stedman's office that the senator is on his way. With that, I'd like to recognize our staff, Ann Krekelberg from Senate Records. Kyle Schramm is on the teleconference network. And my staff, today we've got a newbie over here, Pete Fellman. I'd like to remind everyone to turn off your cell phone. And we have one returning House bill on our agenda today, that being HB 78. Plus, we'll have a first look at Senate Bill 64. So we're going to start with HB 78, Indigenous Peoples Day. At our last meeting, Representative Westlake gave us a brief overview of the bill. Today, we're going to proceed with public testimony. So I'm going to open for public testimony at this time. And is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on the bill? And it's a good thing I got my sharp eyes on me because Representative Westlake is in the room, and I did not see him there, but Representative Westlake, welcome.
Thank you.
And anybody in the room wish to testify on HB 78? Anyone online wishing to testify on HB 78? Okay. We do. Okay, Albert from Shishmaref, please, could you state your name for the record in 2 minutes, please, and testify to the bill?
Yes, sir. Thank you for allowing me to testify in favor of House Bill 78, Indigenous Peoples Day. For the record, I'm Albert Nigaluk of Shishmaref, and representing myself and in respectful memories of my late parents, grandparents, ancestors, and peoples from Alaska.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yes, sir. First of all, congratulations to each of you for your successful 2016 campaigns during your well-deserved elections. Webster's Dictionary defines indigenous as, quote, having originated in and being produced, growing, living, or occurring naturally in a particular region or environment, unquote. HB 78, Indigenous Peoples Day, simply recognizes and respectfully honors original inhabitants of Alaska. I attended Mount Edgecombe High School, and our school yearbook's title was Taheta, T-A-H-E-T-A, signifying the tribes Tlingit, Athabascan, Haida, Eskimo, Tsimshian, and Aleut. Our ancestors who originally settled and lived in our state. Asking you to continue honoring our ancestors by passing this bill. Alaska is blessed to have legislators who make positive decisions on our behalf, unlike our federal government, who is still stomping grapes. Thank you for allowing me to testify, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Albert. Anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing no other off-net people signed up to testify, we're going to close public testimony. I'd like to ask my committee members respectfully, any comments you'd like to make? Anyone? Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House Bill number 7830- LS0368/A from committee with attached zero fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Seeing no objections, the bill will be moved to the next referral. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We're back on the record. Our next item on the agenda is Senate Bill 64, the Uniform Environmental Covenants Act. Here to introduce the bill is the bill's prime sponsor, Senator Peter Machicki. Senator Machicki, please join us, and the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, thanks for hearing the bill today for its first hearing. And when we're through, you probably know this, we have Kristen Ryan, Spill Prevention and Response Director from DEC, and Benjamin Orzeski, Uniform Law Commission Chief Counsel, on the phone, as well as Jennifer Curry. This bill is about, for me, this bill is about taking blighted property and putting it back into productive use in our communities. It's something that we look at when we're thinking about policy and moving policy forward. We want to streamline and remove obstacles that inhibit business, commerce, or the transfer of property, but we're unwilling to reduce expectations for public health, safety, and health and healthy environment. Senate Bill 64 blends all of those objectives together. In 2003, the Uniform Law Commission created the Uniform Environmental Covenants Act to overcome inadequate common law rules. It allows for the sale of property with use limitations to mitigate risk. Alaska is one of only seven states that does not have an environmental covenant law at this time. It protects both the buyer and the seller of contaminated property while allowing the fullest and best use of the property until the contamination reaches safe levels. The covenant is specific to the risks at a particular site and restricts activities that could result in exposure while allowing other uses to occur. Such a process is often all that's necessary to make property transferable as well as economically and functionally viable. So just think about a little story of what used to be a gasoline station, and there's some contamination on the site. Perhaps it's gone into an estate, it's becoming blighted, it's in a valuable part of town. Someone could now, the seller could record the contamination on a covenant. Someone who's willing to invest in the property is willing to take on that level, that may want to open a business, say an auto parts store that is appropriate on that site. You could have a shiny new business on that site, and someday when that contamination is removed, then it would be removed from the covenant. It's voluntary. No one is required to move forward on a covenant. But what the covenant does is it provides transparency throughout the life of the property and provides assurances to buyers and sellers that risks will be safely managed. It would be a simple process. Again, it's voluntary. It would not supplant or impose current contamination removal standards, which will continue to be managed as they are currently. And the Act would not affect the liability of the principally responsible parties, but would provide a method for minimizing exposure to third parties. So without going over a summary, you'll have plenty of time for questions with the others that will testify. I'm going to hand it off to Ms. Henke, who is my staff, and this is her first bill that she'll be carrying. So. Be kind.
We're not done with you yet, Senator. Any questions for Senator Machicki? No. Okay. Now, just please put your name on the record, and you couldn't get a better committee to do your first bill in front of. And Ms. Kukesh in the back there could tell you that, too. It's because she had her first bill in here about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Through the chair, my name is Rachel Henke, and I'm staff to Senator Machicki. So, Section 1 of this bill adds a new article to Chapter 46, and it establishes when an environmental covenant is necessary, who will be a holder, and multiple holders are allowed, who is bound by the covenant, subordination, rules for commonly held property, and states that the covenant has no interest in the land. Provides which documents are required for the record and additional documents that may be required. Provides situations in which the covenant is still valid and enforceable and is priority over common law. outlines procedure for notice, establishes guidelines for recording a covenant in property records, defines terms for termination of a covenant and amendment by court action. Some examples, consent for closure with another interest as priority or eminent domain. Defines procedure for termination of a covenant and amendment by consent. States the department has the power to enforce and bring civil action if there's failure to comply. Creates the ability to enforce an environmental covenant on federal lands. Places covenant restrictions above other land use laws. Provides that the department shall maintain a registry for these covenants. States the act is a uniform law and provides definitions used in the act. Section 2 is on codified law and provides that the Department of the Environmental Conservation and the Department of Natural Resources may adopt necessary regulations to implement the act. And Section 3 provides an immediate effective date for Section 2.
Okay, thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can you tell me the difference between the original bill and the version J?
We do have someone from Department of Law that might be able to talk to those changes better than I could. And she's on the phone.
Thank you.
Senator Gardner, would you like to direct your question to Department of Law?
Sure. And
we have Jennifer Curie here from the Department of Law's online for questions. So let's go to Jennifer.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, there were small changes made between the first and second draft of the bill, including in Section 305, the contents of an environmental covenant. In Section B, there's a list of items that may that may be included in a covenant but are not required, and that was added. There was also an addition in where it talks about the signatories of a bill or of a covenant, and Department of Natural Resources is a required signatory for any piece of property they have an interest in, and we specified that Department of Natural Resources signature cannot be waived.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Curie. Why don't we, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you. Senator Michicki, could you put on the record what a covenant is? An environmental covenant is for a specific purpose?
I can. It's a specific recordable interest in real estate that will be tracked to the Department of Environmental Conservation on their database. And you may be interested, Ms. Co-Chair of Finance, that carries bills and doesn't allow fiscal notes that the department's database is already in place, so we don't expect a fiscal note. And the covenant is specific to the risks of that particular site and restricts activities that could result in exposure while allowing other uses to occur. So essentially, it becomes, travels with the property, and of course, we're going to have, I think you're going to have the director of DEC's spill prevention and response here in just a moment, travels with the property until the removal standards are met for that particular contamination issue. And I'll just a couple reasons why it protects the buyer as much as the seller. Piece of property in Anchorage, Ms. Ryan may talk about that a little more. The buyer was unaware of the contamination, spread a bunch of dirt around the property for the current use of that property, and in doing so, they contaminated adjacent sites and then became liable for the contamination on not only the piece of property they purchased, but the surrounding sites as well. So it really does protect both, and it allows greater flexibility from the department on a timeline of dealing with contaminated property while allowing blighted property to return to productivity. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted on the record specifically that it's a recordable interest on a piece of property.
Sure.
Thank you. No other questions for the bill sponsor at the present time. We plan on bringing up Kristen Ryan, Director of Spill Prevention and Response, because I have a few questions. And we got Ben. Wait, how'd you say that, Senator Machicki? Orzeski, Uniform Law Commission in Chicago. He's online for testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Kristen? Welcome to the committee. Let's put your name and on the record. And
for the record, my name is Kristen Ryan, and I'm the director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You probably know as much about this as anybody, the nuts and bolts of this legislation, correct?
Mr. Chairman, I know quite a bit about it, yes.
Okay. So help me here. Can I give you a hypothetical? I'm going to take a brief of these. Back on the record. So, Ms. Ryan, I want to give you a hypothetical, and you help me understand if this bill would help with a situation like that. So let's say there is a business right here, and there's a fire, and the fire department comes in and it puts the fire out. There's different types of hazardous materials once they're released from their containment. Mm-hmm. Okay? And another person owns this piece of property right here.
Yes.
And the retardant and excess ran over onto this piece of property.
Yes.
Now this person can't sell their property because the department has identified that some of this material has ran over here, and it's just a real problem at no fault of their own. Does this bill help address that person's situation where to help them make the sale, where they'd be able to make a sale of this property? So how would that work in this scenario, or does it even apply?
So, Mr. Chairman, in that scenario, we would be requiring the responsible party to address the contamination they caused on their property and their neighbor's property. If, for some reason, we have decided, there's many reasons this could occur, that it's okay to leave some of that contamination on either property above the cleanup level, a covenant would come into play. And we would say, for example, you say it's a flame retardant, it's contaminated the groundwater. We could put a covenant on the property that said you are not allowed to put a well in on this property, but all other uses can go forward. Excuse me. So that is where the covenant would come into play, if contamination is left on any property above cleanup levels.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, we're going to...
Excuse me, I got an itch in my throat.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a little distracted. I forgot my question here. I'll have to come back to it.
Okay.
I remember.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And this is sort of out of curiosity, but if I'm a person considering buying a piece of property and I need to work with DEC to have it transferred over to me, what's kind of the timeline? Is that going to slow down the sale? How long would it take for this all to be processed?
Well, Senator Gardner, through the chair, so we currently do this already. We have something we call institutional controls that we put on property where contamination has been left above cleanup levels. What this bill does is it communicates those controls to future buyers. It runs with the land. Right now, those controls remain in a database that we maintain. Sometimes they're referenced, sometimes they're not. So this bill doesn't change anything we're currently doing. It just records that action on the title of the property so that future buyers know about it. So we don't see it having any impact on the timeline of the transfer of property.
So, Kristen, with what you just said, so with this bill's passage, this is just a full disclosure on the title, period. That's all it is.
That's right.
Did I miss anything? Got it. Okay.
Senator Stedman has been with us for quite some time. I just would like to invite. So I have a question on the sectional. Then and I don't know if you have a copy of the sectional in front of you, but towards the bottom page of the page, AS 4604-340, this creates the ability to enforce an environmental covenant on federal lands. So how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, what the bill does, we have over 60% of our contaminated sites are on federal property. A large percentage of our contaminated sites are in that scenario. We are not allowed to put an environmental covenant on federal property. What the bill allows us to do is put a notice of use restriction on federal property, which is about as good as we can get on property that's in the hands of the federal government. That is a tool that the state of Colorado developed in conjunction with the federal agencies, and it's been working in Colorado. So we have adapted the uniform law to include that section in particular to allow us to put the equivalent of a covenant on federal property.
So you're able to make a public notification of federal contaminated property?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, because there are many cases where that property is then transferred into either state ownership or private ownership, and we want to ensure that restriction is communicated to those future buyers or native corporations who have, you know, there's been many cases of the transfer of federal property that's contaminated, and the new purchaser may or may not know about the contamination. Now, we can't fix those old transfers, but going forward, this legislation would stop that from occurring.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. How does properties that are contaminated get identified, particularly those that are state and private lands?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, there's a variety of ways they are identified, but usually someone discovers a release has occurred and contacts the department to determine what needs to be done about it.
So people from Bristol Bay came to my office this last week and were concerned about some contaminations that may have occurred during the pebble search for minerals in that area.
Yeah.
Have they been identified?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, that activity occurred under permits from the Department of Natural Resources, and from what I know, there is no contamination that has been left above our cleanup levels. Now, yes, I understand there has been some residual drilling muds that remain, but from what I understand, they are not designated as contaminated sites, which would trigger our involvement.
So it's the responsibility of DNR to make that determination, or is it your department that makes that determination if the people of the region have concerns?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, they can contact us and we can work, we can talk to them about the results if they have data. It's about any data that they have. If they have data that indicates it's above our cleanup levels, then we would definitely be registering those sites as contaminated sites and then working with a responsible party to get them cleaned up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator McKinnon?
Thank you. Are you familiar with the travesty well issue from on federal land? So are those sites that are listed as federal sites that would have these notes?
Yes, Senator McKinnon, through the chair, we would, if we chose to leave contamination above the cleanup levels, which in some of those sites they have decided to do that, then yes, we would put a notice of restricted use because of the federal property inability to use a covenant. But yes, that's what we would
Thank
do.
You.
Thank you. So any other questions for Director Ryan? Why don't you just hang there just for a minute? I'm going to go on off net to the Uniform Law Commission and Mr. Ben Orzecki, I'm butchering it, but in Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, thank you, Senator Bishop, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, and thank you to Senator Machiki for sponsoring this legislation. So my name is Ben Orzecki. I'm with the Uniform Law Commission. If you, those of you who are not familiar with our organization, very briefly, we're a nonprofit organization and we've been around since 1892. And our job is to draft nonpartisan model legislation in areas of state law for which there's some need for uniformity between the states. So Alaska has enacted dozens of uniform laws, including the Uniform Commercial Code, the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, Uniform Transfers to Minors Act, etc. This is another uniform act, and it was completed in 2003. It's since been enacted in 23 states around the country, plus the District of Columbia and the U.S. Virgin Islands have also enacted a version of this. As I think the Senator said earlier, there are another 20 or so states that have their own environmental covenant law that's not a version of the Uniform Act, but Alaska is one of only seven states that doesn't have some version of an environmental covenant law. I agree with all of the testimony that's been previously given, and I don't want to repeat it, but I'll just maybe give a couple of examples of how these environmental covenants can be used, which will help to illustrate that it's really a flexible tool that can be adapted to many different situations. So one common use is when a landfill is closed. Oftentimes a place where trash has been dumped or hazardous waste will be capped with a concrete cap or with a clay cap or something. And the environmental covenant in that case might prohibit any excavation that would penetrate that cap and allow moisture to seep in. That's a catastrophe that you may be familiar with from about 50 years ago. The Love Canal site in upstate New York was a former dump that had been capped and then later sold, and the developer punched through the containment provisions that were put on top of that dump, and resulting in hazard to people who lived in homes that were built on top of it that could have been avoided had there been some sort of covenant in place. Another common thing you'll see in a covenant is some sort of reporting requirement. So in the example that was given earlier of contamination, say at a site that's contaminating the ground, and so that you can't dig a new well or pump groundwater to the surface, there might be a monitoring requirement where the owner has to do some sort of test monthly or quarterly and report to the Department of Environmental Conservation what the results of that test are. And the environmental covenant might say that it remains in place until contamination level reaches a certain level for 6 months consecutively, and at that point it can be removed, title cleared, and that land put back into fully productive use. It's really as flexible as the department chooses to make it. They can, and it's whatever the parties choose to agree to. As the Senator said, it's a completely voluntary agreement. People will generally enter into these things because they're trying to make the best of a bad situation and make the land as productive as it can be. I will stop there and I'll be happy to take any questions from members of the committee.
Thank you, sir. Looking around, I don't think we have any questions at this time. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, any other questions from committee for today? Seeing none, our plan is to hold Senator Machiki to hold this bill over till next week, and we will not have a meeting this Thursday. Having no further business, our meeting is adjourned at 4 p.m.